people are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
With each passing year, there's more and more interest in conserving energy and resources. While at one time these concerns were shared by environmentalists, today the stakeholders have grown to include just about everybody, local government, savvy business people, and certainly consumers across the board. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, my guest is Bruce Mast, Program Director for Build It Green, a membership-supported nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting healthy, energy, and resource-efficient homes in California. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you, John.
Tell us how Build It Green actually goes about its work. Do you work on legislation, or is it more a matter of training and education?
Both and more. So we have kind of a three-part strategy, and we consider all three parts to be interdependent and essential to achieve our market transformation goals. So we do a lot of work with local governments and state governments on advocacy and policy development. We do a lot of work with the building industry through our professional training and education programs to help build the capacity of the industry to deliver green homes. And then for consumers, we offer a labeling program for green homes called GreenPoint Rated that, from their perspective, takes the guesswork out of finding a green home or making decisions around their green home improvements.
Has everyone at this point agreed on a definition of what is green?
I would say there's a working consensus. I mean, basically, any green building system, you see kind of five major tenets that are embedded in there: energy efficiency, water conservation, indoor air quality, resource conservation, and community design. And those five things tend to show up over and over.
At one time, people who were in favor of more stringent policies regarding energy efficiency were at odds with the building industry. Is that still the case?
Yes and no. I mean, the building industry, I think, recognizes that they have a role to play in reducing our overall energy consumption. I think that tension is relieved to some degree by the fact that on the public side that there is, you know, strong incentives to support the building industry's transition to more efficient building. And also there is renewed focus on the existing housing stock and the existing building stock. And that has been kind of an important point for the building industry for a while, that, you know, you can't achieve all these energy efficiency goals simply on the backs of the new construction world.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of existing construction out there that either has to be torn down or retrofitted and
brought
up.
Yeah. I mean, when you look out to 2030, 2050, and you project the building stock that will need to be on the ground at that point, you know, something like 70 or 80% of that building stock has already been built. So going back and retrofitting those buildings is very important, and we cannot meet our climate goals and reduce our, you know, greenhouse gas emissions if we only focus on new construction.
Is there tension at this point between the need to build green and the need for developers to reap profits?
There has been tension, but I think that that's also going to ease. And as green building gets in the marketplace and as credible labeling programs get better recognized, I think we're going to see more and more recognition of the market value for green building. And we're already seeing it in studies coming out of Seattle and Atlanta, where homes that have a third-party verified green label, you put them on the market, you list them on the MLS, and then you compare their sales values to homes that are not labeled with a green label. And you see that these homes sell for more, they sell faster. And when that kind of market value becomes established in the marketplace, I think people are going to be less and less worried about the upfront investment cost.
And are consumers also drawn to these homes because they know that, you know, not only is it the responsible thing to do, but in the end, they're going to save money on utilities, right?
Yes, I think there's still quite a bit of confusion among lay people about what really is green and what, you know, really trying to sort through these green claims and understand, you know, what this all means. And we still have a lot of work to do to establish, you know, really credible labeling programs that they can look at and say, ah, if I see that, that means this home has these attributes that I'm looking for.
So tell me more about the GreenPoint rating system.
Basically, it's a labeling system for green homes. We have a labeling system for new construction in multifamily, but we're extending that now to for rehab of existing multifamily building as well. And basically, what we have here is a point-based system. It's very flexible. We've tried to minimize the number of upfront prerequisites. We tried to balance the accessibility of the program with strong credibility. Everything is verified by a third party, so we've trained a network of Greenpoint raters. These are independent business people who the builder would hire to verify the work that's being done and verify the green measures that go into that. There's a point scale, and they have to earn points in these at least four categories that I listed before: energy, water, indoor air quality, resource conservation. And if they meet the minimum requirements of the program, they can call their project a Greenpoint rated project, and they get a certificate and a seal of approval. And consumers that see that label know that this building was built above code, above standard practice in all these categories.
So how is this system different from the LEED rating system?
Very similar objectives, but we've put more focus on kind of this balance between credibility and accessibility, and we've tried to make this a program that any builder, regardless of their sophistication, if they come in and they are committed to building green, that they can figure it out and kind of get started. So we've tried to give builders kind of stepping stones to greener building rather than making that first step a giant leap. So both systems are capable of evaluating, you know, the greenest of the green projects, but ours is easier for builders getting into it for the first time.
And is this only available at this point in California?
In California and in Las Vegas, although we are actively considering opening up to builders nationwide.
So is that how it works? You have, you know, kind of a lab here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and you develop a program, and then it extends to the state and then hopefully to the country?
Tell me what you mean by lab.
Well, just that programs are piloted here.
Yeah, so yeah, and that's been our kind of standard model, is that we've piloted things here in the Bay Area, and then we've rolled them out statewide, yes.
And is the hope eventually to have these kinds of practices and policies spread throughout the country?
That's right, and really, you know, for us to achieve our environmental goals, these practices need to become standard practice in just about every building that gets built, every building gets remodeled or improved, and you know, so it cannot be this, you know, kind of narrow niche thing that's just for a handful of, you know, demonstration projects.
Right. Bruce, many local governments have instituted green building policies. In general, do you find that these go far enough, or is there really a wide range of policies that are adopted across different cities and counties?
There is a wide range. You know, different local governments have, you know, different local priorities, and so there is quite a bit of experimentation. There's also a kind of a natural rivalry among local governments, and you know, they all want to be, you know, the best and on the cutting edge, and so there's, you know, a bit of one-upmanship at times.
That's a good thing, right?
It isn't. Well, it's yes and no. We definitely like to see local governments, you know, pushing the envelope. On the other hand, from the private sector perspective, from the builder's perspective, there's a really strong value in having some regional consistency. And when you have, you know, builders that work in multiple jurisdictions, it really lowers their barriers to building green if they can learn one system and it's the same system wherever they go and the same basic criteria. So we encourage local governments to adopt the same basic threshold and then offer rewards if they would like builders to go beyond that basic threshold in certain categories.
Oh, that's very clever. So do you have mechanisms for sharing best practices between different localities?
Yes. Yeah, so we work a lot with local governments, and our whole focus is try to foster that kind of lessons learned and information sharing and best practices. So we, a couple things we do. One is that we've organized public agency councils. We have chapters here in the Bay Area, in Sacramento, in the Los Angeles Basin, and in San Diego. And these are quarterly forums for local governments to get together. These are generally all-day or half-day workshops. We have guest speakers come in talking about kind of topical issues that are, you know, kind of on the front burner. And then there's also, you know, lots of opportunity for information sharing. We also share a lot of resources on our website. We developed a whole roadmap for local governments to give them some guidance on how to go about developing programs and incentives and policies locally. And then we spend a fair amount of time just out on the road meeting with local governments and you know, attending their meetings and going to city council meetings and things like that, and you know, providing some ongoing technical support.
What type of green practices and policies are we seeing with affordable housing development? Are there trends in that area?
There are. I think the most interesting one, from my perspective, is the process of linking green building considerations with financing decisions. And in California, the most groundbreaking link was made through the Tax Credit Allocation Committee, which is a major source of funding for new affordable housing. And the Tax Credit Allocation Committee built into their funding criteria a set of green building measures, and it's a point-based competitive process. And so these measures are not required of every developer, but you pretty much have to go for those points if you want to be competitive. And that has been tremendously effective at moving the industry. And we're seeing those kinds of things with other agencies, the local governments we've done work with, for example, the San Francisco Mayor's Office of Housing, looking to better align its financing decisions with green building priorities. One of the things that's really interesting and I think will be a big help is there's a mechanism called an energy efficient utility allowance that gives builders credit for building more energy efficient buildings and allows them to recoup some of that investment in the rental calculations, and that's a really important mechanism. So there's a number of things like that, some interesting signs of life with at the federal level with HUD, Housing and Urban Development, that they're interested in tying their funding and financing decisions to green building criteria. So that's really, for me, the where the frontier is.
What is next on the horizon for your organization, for Build It Green?
Well, right now, we are kind of our big focus right now is to figure out how to gain traction within the existing building stock. And this is a tremendous challenge, and it's also a challenge that, as the entire state of California, in fact, the entire nation, is kind of a new challenge that we're embracing as a society. And there's a couple things driving it. One is the recognition that we've, finally, that we really need to do something proactively to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, and so we have to address the existing building stock. The other issue is that, with the economic downturn, new construction activity has really slowed dramatically, and so we're looking at retrofitting existing buildings as a way of putting those unemployed and underemployed construction workers back to work. So there's lots of new investment, federal stimulus money that's going into this arena. There's new financing mechanisms that are being developed to make it easier for homeowners to retrofit their homes, and we're very much in the middle of doing program design and figuring out how to actually roll out programs and effective communication programs and marketing and outreach to engage homeowners to take action.
Excellent. Bruce Mast, thank you so much for joining us today on the Affordable Housing Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Bruce Mast is the program director for Build It Green. And if you'd like to learn more, you can visit their website at builditgreen.org. I'm Joanne Green for the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.